Hey, did you know you can actually earn BACBCUs if you're listening to this episode? If you'd like to learn more, including about our Behavior Analyst Certification Board CEUs, that is continuing education units for people that hold the credentials by the BACB, you can go to explanatoryfiction.com and find this episode.
It's really confusing when she lashes out at us. I know Jason really wants her to work on, you know, reading, writing, math. I still really would like to see her making some friends. You know?
Yeah, but we're
going for sleepovers.
You're more worried she's going to end up alone and lonely. And like, no matter how behind she might end up academically, that's going to pale in comparison to the social isolation she's going to feel if she doesn't get those skills. Is that my understanding of what you're saying, right?
She likes spending time on the computer, on her iPad, doing Roblox and Minecraft stuff. Like, isn't that just the basics of, like, coding, and you're going to make good money? So, like, shouldn't we focus on the things where eventually she's going to be able to function in society, and she doesn't necessarily, I just don't know if it's worth where eventually we're wrestling in the front yard because she's running away from us.
Welcome to Explanatory Fiction. It's very important that you know how this podcast is structured. We've randomly generated this case. The variables are entirely fictional. That's right, because with the power of math and science, you can actually do these things now. In fact, the name Caitlin Morton was randomly generated too. And the episode art, you guessed it, also made by artificial intelligence. But the best part is our team is real and the conversations that ensue are designed as a game that you get to play along with us. In each episode, we have one person that is evaluating the case from a clinical decision-making model, and the others are accomplices of mine who are trying to stump the analyst. Our challenge to you is, can you figure out a possible treatment model before us? Here we go. Caitlin Morton is a 12-year-old child with autism spectrum disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. In the past, she has hurt others through aggressive behavior, eloped from home and school, and threatened others. However, there are clear signs of escalation that occur prior if you're watching closely. She doesn't like going to school and struggles to make friends due to her anxiety. Her father believes that she will move past this stage and can succeed in a tech-related field if she just focused on the right things and learned the right things now. However, her mother disagrees and is constantly wondering how to motivate her daughter to go to school, make friends, and engage in social settings. In the past, she received some in-home ABA therapy as a child, and nowadays receives full-time support through her parents at home and has some infrequent but regular group speech and language therapy social skill sessions when she does make it to school. Oh, and I forgot, she absolutely loves her therapeutic horseback riding when it's offered at school. And this is where you come in. The behavioral consultation she is currently receiving needs to be re-evaluated. You received a call from her mother asking for an independent consultation and evaluation of the behavior analyst who is currently providing 10 hours a week of in-home ABA therapy. So we begin when you open the door and you're surprised to find Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark.
My name's Dimitri. I'm here to see Caitlin and do an observation.
Oh, the family? That's odd. I'm the BCBA on this case. I've been working it for a minute.
Oh, wonderful. That's fantastic. It's really nice to meet you. It's always good to meet a fellow professional. I'm really just here to maybe help support and maybe give a second opinion and just do a little bit of like an outside bird's eye view. It seems that maybe things have gotten a little off track, and the parents were hoping just to get a couple professionals together. So if you don't mind, is there somewhere I can just go sit and maybe do a little bit of observation? And then I would love to sit down and talk with you afterwards.
Yeah. So, I've been doing 10 hours a week, a lot of direct care with the client right now. We've been having some trouble retaining RBTs. I've tried a couple things. I think we're making progress, but sure, I guess you can watch, observe.
Oh, is this corner over here okay, or would this work?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic.
Oh, good. Dimitri, you're here. And I see you've had a chance to meet Mark. That's fabulous. I'm so sorry, Mark. I forgot to tell you that Dimitri was coming today, but I'm really glad you met. How about I take Caitlin out of your hands for a little bit, and you guys can talk. And Mark, you can share what you've been doing, and Dimitri, you can get an idea of everything we've been doing with Caitlin so far.
Sounds good to me. Kitchen seem okay while you guys are in the living room, or is there a little bit more private space we can go to?
Yeah, the kitchen's fine. I'll take her to her playroom.
Hey, Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk to me. Obviously, we just sat down and Suzanne just walked in on us, so I didn't get a chance to really see Caitlin in action, but maybe you can kind of walk me through everything and give me an idea of what's going on and what kind of some of the big challenges have been. Something to kind of give us a thread to pull on here together.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm sure mom filled you in a little bit. Caitlin's 12 years old. She's got a generalized anxiety disorder. It sometimes results in aggressive behavior. Parents would really like to see her make some more friends. She's pretty reserved, except when it comes to going to equine therapy at school. Sometimes the behavior escalates to a time where we have to physically manage her. Okay. Right now, for programming wise, I'm working on a couple different things. I'm doing the Rupi autism training with the parents. They're saying that they're not getting much out of it. They seem to feel that the information is not relevant as it relates to Caitlin and her needs. So we've talked about like behavior. I did the chapters on behavioral principles, prevention strategies, daily schedules, reinforcement. I read them word for word, what's in the Rupi autism training. Right now, because it's just me, I'm only doing monthly probes on behavior goals and skill acquisition targets. Half the time I'm in here as an RBT, half the time I'm supervising a brand new RBT who leaves in a couple weeks. So
can I pause you real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I'm not 100% familiar with the Rupi per se. You mind walking me through that a little bit?
It's kind of like a parent version of the 40-hour training for RBTs.
Oh, okay.
It goes over basic behavioral principles and provides some examples.
Okay, so it's like a parent protocol for behavior management, just like interacting with a kid with autism and stuff. And it's mostly
teaching them
like,
reinforcement, punishment,
contingencies, that kind of stuff. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. And it's like a structured protocol. And you said they're not really responding to it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
They actually asked me to stop doing it.
Okay. Oh, really? Why?
They said they weren't getting anything out of it. They don't think that it relates to Caitlin's case. I'm trying to really drive home these behavior analytic principles that are outlined in the training. They're not biting.
Is it a jargony problem or is it they think she should just do it problem?
It's
like she's like she has a high enough capacity and she should have the skills. This is just more of like a matter. She's making bad decisions and they don't want to view it from an operant point of view type thing. Or they're like not there.
A little bit of A, a little bit of B.
So what have you been doing so you've been doing the Rupi with them. What have you been working on with her?
Yeah. So with her, we've got a token system that we're working on right now. So anytime she makes a positive statement about emotions, she gets a token. The token system is tiered. So as she starts to make friends and go to social events, there's some bigger prizes to earn. There's a horse camp is the final goal that she can ultimately earn. She has not made it past the first tier though. And we have been doing it for a minute. Sometimes she'll say some positive self statements, but overall, I think we're going to get there with the tier token system, but it takes time.
So you mind if we backtrack here a little bit? Cause I'm trying to tie in the token system to some of the problem behaviors you outlined.
Yeah.
You mentioned that she does have like episodes or instances of aggression towards others.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned that she will elope sometimes.
Yes, sometimes.
Right? Okay. So like how frequently are we talking about aggression towards others?
Well,
I guess, hold on, time out before we get the frequency. What does it look like?
So the behavior happens like once, twice a month. It's honestly been really hard for me to
twice a month.
Pinpoint an intervention because the behavior happens so infrequently.
Is it high magnitude though? So like
it is pretty high magnitude.
It's aggression towards others, but is she just kind of like, or is it like, holy cannoli, I think I just lost an eye?
There's some intensity behind it. Not eye gouging intensity, but people have gotten hurt. Mom and dad have bruises.
Okay.
And then it's also paired with the elopement. So the aggression happens, followed immediately by the elopement kind of as all this is going on, she's usually stating something like, I'm going to kill you. Sometimes it's self-harm related, such as I'd rather be dead. There is property destruction. She just tore down the family's new TV a couple weeks ago. That was pretty intense. All paired with yelling, screaming, and crying. We have had to.
What are the conditions? Let me just backtrack. Let me just pause you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm just trying to information gather. So if it seems like I'm interrupting you, please don't take it personally. I'm not trying to break your
whatever concentration. You got
to do. I think I'm just trying to keep up. so if we're talking about, so it only happens infrequently, but there is a decent magnitude to it. I guess the question that I would have is like, what are some of the conditions? Like, why is it? I mean, because we're saying that it's a loom and we're saying, I think her mom mentioned to me that it has to do about her not wanting to go to school sometimes. But I mean, if she goes to school every day, theoretically, should be happening a lot more. So what do you think?
Well, she doesn't go to school every day.
Oh, okay.
Some days are better than others. It's pretty spotty attendance overall. Okay. And it's not just school. There's a social component. Anytime mom and dad want to go out in public, really. Or kind of force these interactions between her and similar peers, we tend to kind of see it.
So would you characterize it as socially avoidant?
Yes. And she kind of lets it build up across. Like, you can tell when she's had a bad day at school, and then for the next few days, it just kind of gets worse and worse until it pops.
I see. So it's a slow burn. She's not necessarily hyperreactive or quick to react. It's a slow mounting escalation point until she hits a breaking point. There's some kind of cathartic release. And then she goes back to a low enough baseline to where then like her threshold needs to build back up to break again, which is why it's probably so infrequent.
Yeah. So right now we are like when she does get escalated, I use a lot of first then statements. So first you have to finish X, then you can do Y. I mean, we did it the other day when it was time to go to swim lessons. First we're going to go to swim, then we can come home and play some Roblox.
That kind of boundary setting.
Sometimes she'll cover her ears sometimes and just not, I mean, we repeat it every 3 minutes if nothing happens. I mean, she just kind of continues to protest it. Ultimately, it escalates and mom and dad get involved. They do utilize a restraint system when it gets to that point. We make sure that when we do it, mom and dad are saying encouraging things to kind of help with her anxiety a little bit while we're going through it. So they say, "We love you. This is why we're doing this. We know you don't want to actually die. Please don't say mean things." And then we remind her that she's got to calm down.
Okay. That's a lot of talking.
Yeah. I mean,
go ahead.
She's got a pretty big verbal repertoire, so she knows what we're talking about.
Okay. And then, so like, it's just a lot of variability. That's the intensity. I don't remember if there were any medications involved. Is she medicated for anything?
So she's on fluoxetine for her anxiety disorder. And she's also got celiac, but she's not taking medications for that.
Okay. And then how long has she been on that?
Since she got diagnosed a couple years ago.
Okay, so a long time ago.
Yeah.
Or like the whole time. And they do adjustments or anything like that? And like she seems to have, she's responded in some way. Like, how has it positively impacted her behavior, demeanor, and or affect?
It's gotten a bit better with time. The doctors are refusing to upper dose anymore though.
Okay. So she's kind of maxed out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wow. You got a lot going on here. Is there any factors that I need to know about? Any history of trauma?
No, there's no trauma. She is really resistant to attending school. But there's no documented traumatic events that have happened at school that would kind of warrant the type of behavior we're seeing.
I really want to dig into this social avoidance thing, because I got to be honest, you hear that with people with autism, or just in general, like you hear that with people with anxiety too, right? Like agoraphobia is an anxiety disorder, so it's being afraid of being outside around a bunch of people or groups or whatever. But I mean, like, what is she saying, or what does it look like when she is around those people? Is she like just totally recoiling? Is she just like have an episode, or like you can tell that she's like screaming in her head? Like, what are we really talking about in terms of like the social what does social avoidance really look like? It's because I mean, she gets the exposure when she goes to school. Obviously it's frustrating. We see a few days where it compounds, and then eventually you see that cathartic explosion or whatever, or in that cathartic episode. But I mean, like in the moment with minus all those, there's got to be some kind of like, she has to be signaling something about the discomfort she's experiencing, right? So what does that look like?
She usually orients away from people who are speaking, head down type stuff. Okay. If she's got her phone on her, she's playing Roblox with headphones in, and avoiding at all cost.
I see.
She will respond when people initiate conversation with her, but, there's never really conversational volleys. She tries to, she never follows up with a question.
Okay. So it's just, she's just like one word short answers. Anything I can do to make you go away, I will go away.
Sorry to interrupt. I just overheard you while I was grabbing Caitlin some water. She's actually also very worried about looking like she doesn't know how to do things in front of her friends.
So you think she's embarrassed because of whatever, she has some skill deficits, or you think she's aware of, if not aware, but I mean like she feels that she has skill deficits that are obvious to her peers, and that you think that has to do with like some kind of embarrassment or something?
Yeah, she gets really embarrassed. She'll come and confide in me and tell me about embarrassing situations mm-hmm. she's had at school. That's new. She never used to be able to tell me those types of things.
Okay.
But now she's starting to.
Interesting.
So one thing that we're working on to help with her anxiety is we're doing zones of regulation. She's pretty good at matching emotions with their labels when she wants to. She scores 100% when she really tries, but she doesn't like talking about her emotions. She tends to get kind of embarrassed when we talk about them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, anytime I bring out the zones of regulation book, honestly, there's at least a little bit of protest.
She cringes.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm cringing with her. So tell me, okay. So she doesn't like talking about her emotions. Obviously she doesn't like to really be around people. She doesn't really want to talk to them,
but she's kind of got to do all those things.
And well, I mean, to be a functioning member of society. Yeah. If like, yeah, absolutely. You have to, I mean, living life is a social game, right? So I mean, yes. You can't necessarily live life without being around other people in some capacity or in some way. You definitely need to negotiate that to do it on your own terms as much as possible. But it is a life is a continual and continuous compromise of social opportunity. So I agree with you. Yeah, we definitely got to target that. You're doing the right thing by trying to target that. I'm more trying to understand a little bit in terms of, well, before I go there. So let me, okay. So what is she into? And we'll get, yeah. What is she into?
Well, she loves her equine therapy at school when they bring the horses in.
Love horses. That's
one of the most consistent times. Oh, nice.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one day a month where we guarantee she's going to school. She likes her fidgets. She's always kind of got a fidget. Sometimes it's slime.
Who doesn't?
Sometimes it's a fidget spinner. Sometimes it's like a little rope thing. She likes her video games. Right now for her token economy, a lot of times she'll earn Robux to spend on Roblox.
Nice.
And she also likes Minecraft. She does arts and crafts. She enjoys that a bit, as well as bike riding.
Minecraft's hard. Is she good at that? Like, is she real good at that?
I mean, she doesn't fall over.
Like, she can build cool stuff?
Like, oh, I thought you were asking about bike riding.
No, arts and crafts. Sorry, Minecraft.
Oh, Minecraft. Yeah, no, she's built some pretty cool stuff. Usually kind of tied back to those interests. She does a lot of like
their executive zoo. Functioning is what I'm getting at. Cause I mean, if we can express that kind of creativity in such a, you know, that actually it makes sense and is usable. I mean, that says that there's a lot going on and she has a lot, you know, inside that she's not getting out.
So yeah. She's
trying to get some insight into what she's into. Okay.
She's real smart and when she wants to be.
So let me ask you this then. Final question, really. Is there anything that I just really need to know that I haven't asked about?
We do this pairing procedure. I try and pair myself with her by smiling, engaging in activities with her. So when she's doing fun stuff, I'm hanging out with her, smiling. I tell her how cool her Roblox house is. And we do some social stories sometimes. We haven't seen many gains, honestly, since picking up the case. I think that's because we've been rotating through RBTs. Out here in rural Montana, it's just really hard to keep an RBT on the case and really invest in the RBT to the level that we need to have a successful treatment plan. So I think that's why we're not seeing the gains. I do the best that I can. Providing direct care.
The inconsistency makes it really hard. You know, some of the challenges with the whole, with the Ruby and kind of the disagreements with getting some of those behavioral principles embedded is kind of a little bit of a challenge, but also, I mean, in general, targeting social avoidance and trying to do it through strict motivational means, like, you know, carrots and sticks with like a token economy, that kind of presents a challenge as well, because she can just protest.
One last thing you should know, she doesn't really like praise. Anytime I try and tell her good job, it kind of just makes things worse. So we do.
Does she like to be told she's bad though? Like, is it like the inverse? Like she looks for corrections?
No.
Or is it just she finds it embarrassing to be told how nice she is or good she is and stuff?
It's the embarrassing component.
That embarrassment seems to be an underlying theme of this whole thing. I'm sensing an essential component.
I mean, she does earn on her schedules when I come work with her and when the RBTs do. So she is earning. She's getting access to her Roblox during session and all that stuff. So it's not like we're not making any progress.
Caitlin's father, finishing up his workday, peeks around the corner. And Suzanne notices, so she kind of lends an ear as she's hanging out with Caitlin.
Hey, how's it going, man? I'm Jason.
Hey, how's it going, man? I'm Dimitri. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Suzanne mentioned
your name is
coming out. Jason. I'm
Jason.
Father.
Lovely. Yes. Nice to meet you, Jason.
Awesome. I know you kind of came here because we're still having just the same kind of issues we've been having. And I just kind of wanted to know, I don't know. We're giving her all different kinds of therapy and she's not making the progress we want. And if I'm being honest,
what's your take on it? What's your take on it?
Well, I work all over the region. I work in IT and I really don't. I know that everyone talks, a big goal for her is to be able to communicate and talk to people. I barely talk to people for my job. There's online school now. I just don't see why we're picking these fights. And, you know, I want to lean into Mark's plan and we're trying to use all the positive reinforcement and things from the videos. But I'm getting worn out of trying to kind of pick these battles and push for this one. I'm not seeing the payoff.
I mean, I totally hear you and I totally get it. I mean, listen, man, it's your job in the sense that you're a parent, it's your child, but it's not your job in terms of understanding the scientific realities of how to deal with your kid and stuff. I mean, you're a parent, you work full time and I understand. I am a parent, but I am not a parent of child special needs. So I can't even begin to think about what your experience is like. And I hear you. So I definitely think there's a solution here to be had that can both address Caitlin's needs, but also take some of the pressure off of you. And I think we can get there. And I think there's some things that we can talk about just based on this conversation. I really appreciate your candor, though. That really makes this an easier process. And actually, since you were willing to be so open and honest, Mom, what about you? I mean, Suzanne, what's your bottom line take here? Like, what do you think is going on?
I don't know what's going on. It's really confusing when she lashes out at us. I know Jason really wants her to work on, you know, reading, writing, math. I still really would like to see her making some friends, you know?
Yeah, but we're
going for sleepovers.
You're more worried she's going to end up alone and lonely. And like, no matter how behind she might end up academically, that's going to pale in comparison to the social isolation she's going to feel if she doesn't get those skills. Is that my understanding?
Well, I mean, there's so much online learning now. She doesn't need to finish all her learning before grade 12 or the end of school. She can do that whenever, but making friends and building memories, that's super important at her age.
Sure. Experiences matter. Yeah.
She likes spending time on the computer, on her iPad, doing Roblox and Minecraft stuff. Like, isn't that just the basics of, like, coding and you're going to make good money? So, like, shouldn't we focus on the things where eventually she's going to be able to function in society, and she doesn't I just don't know if it's worth where eventually we're wrestling in the front yard because she's running away from us.
First of all, I totally agree with you. I think anything that's leading to the fact that you guys are wrestling with her in the backyard or front yard or anywhere, period, wrestling with her, period, is a problem. So I think we just need to talk about, is the intervention creating that, or are the conditions of her just leaving the house at any point in time the thing that are causing that? At this point in time, I don't know. I can't quite tell that information. If I had to guess, just based on what everyone's saying, it seems the more and more exposure she gets to other people or strangers over extended periods of times, that creates this kind of like slow simmering bubbling effect. And ultimately that leads to the explosion. And quite frankly, you guys are safe people for her to explode at. And you guys probably push the hardest because you're her parents and you feel comfortable doing that because you're the authority figures in her life. That when it finally does hit that precipice or that threshold, that's when it happens and that's when you see it. But ultimately, that does highlight the particular weak areas or the particular spots we do want to talk about, and we do want to see how we can soften it. Because when it boils down to it, I agree with you, Jason. There's a million and different one ways that a people can live their lives at this point in time where they almost have to not engage with other humans. But I would argue there is a quality of life question here that you should consider. I'm not telling you you have to. I'm just saying, like, if you want my professional opinion, I think it's something worth thinking about. Is that whether or not you need to get along with people on a day-to-day basis is kind of irrelevant to whether or not you can if you have to. And no matter what, she's going to have to find opportunities to go to the doctor. She's going to have to go to the bank and manage her finances. She's going to have to talk to a loan officer to get a mortgage. She's going to have to talk to a car dealer to buy a car. She's going to have to just, I don't know, go to the grocery store. And even if she does it, let's just say she gets all that stuff delivered, she's going to have to deal with a delivery person. So, I mean, like, even if we just totally create this online reality for her, there's still going to be instances of social interaction and social behavior that she's going to need to engage in. So the question is, to what degree can we soften the emotional impact that that has on her so that it doesn't create that overarching anxiety, that overarching just emotionality that she seems to be having as a result of it. So, and Susanna, to your point too, I can agree with you in some sense too. I think you bring up an excellent point. Like, kids do need people. And honestly, it might be one of those things that if she did learn the value of other people and she was able to overcome those embarrassing feelings that she's experiencing, that she would find joy in it, right? I mean, you don't really appreciate what love is until you've experienced love, and you can't find love unless you can interact with other people, right? I mean, so you don't want her to be alone for the rest of her life. That's not necessarily, you know, at least to most people, I would say, maybe not to everyone, but to most people, that is not an optimal living experience, not an optimal lifetime. So I do have some thoughts about this, just from everything talked about. And if Mark's okay with it, I'd like to share those, because I think we can maybe rework some of these things, or at least talk about functional ways we can look at it that might explicitly target what we want, kind of soften the reins on the things that are kind of creating the conditions of explosivity, and then kind of just find that middle ground we're really talking about to get to where we want to go. So if you guys don't mind, I'd like to go through that. Is everyone okay with that?
I'm open to listening to what you think.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your opinion so far.
I mean, if mom and dad are cool with it, then I guess it's fine.
Yeah. And Mark, you know, man, at any point in time, if I'm off base, just when we're going through this, please stop, interrupt me, and let's kind of like go through it together, kind of one step at a time. Okay.
Sure.
So at this point, Suzanne and Jason take a little break. They're hanging out with Caitlin, and both Mark and Dimitri have a little bit of time to kind of discuss the changes that Dimitri's considering, and the two are hashing it out.
Okay. Hey, Mark, now that we kind of have some time to kind of really look at this and kind of based on what I'm kind of thinking here, do you mind if we just really take a look at the behavior plan and just kind of like some of the contingencies that you've built there?
Sure.
Okay, so would you mind walking me through some of those nuances?
Yeah, so the token system was to, we really wanted to increase Caitlin's positive statements and conversations about emotions. They're just so negative now. I was thinking with a kind of shift in perspective, we could kind of start to see some of those behavior changes we're looking for. I also wanted the token system to help her make some friends. I mean, the rewards on there are pretty sweet. And she could even take her friends on some of the rewards if she got to them. The token system also helps as a schedule for the family. I mean, they mentioned that it can be hard to run sometimes, but when they do run it, she earns at the end of her schedule. It helps build in some familiarity for her day, and predictability, which seems to kind of decrease the anxiety that we see. And then, I mean, the last part of the token system, we just want her to try new things, new food, new activities. These things get her tokens.
So how does the token system, is it on a fix? Is it on a variable? Is it on a ratio, an interval? I mean, what is it exactly that we're talking about here? Like, she gets a token every time she says a positive statement. She gets a token for saying FR1. Positive statements. She gets like, I mean, what are we, what
it's
is
so infrequent. So we're doing an FR1.
So every time she says, if she says a positive statement, she gets a token.
Yeah.
Okay. If she, what was the other thing you mentioned?
Making friends.
Okay. So how do you measure making friends?
I mean, she's got a couple people's phone number.
Before we even get to that, how do you define measure? Like, if she just makes some kind of like initiation of conversation, if it's like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. Okay. So she says hi to somebody on her social media, or she tries to call one of the people that her parents have tried to set up play dates for. She gets a token for that.
Okay.
And then
what was the last thing you said?
So there is a work component when we're doing the zones of regulation. So when she completes her schedule as well, she gets a token. Okay. And then when she tries new things, any new things she tries. So the other day we got her to try spaghetti and meatballs for the first time. So she got a token for that.
Okay. So you're kind of targeting everything in the kitchen sink here a little bit, all over the place, right? We're kind of targeting food.
Yeah.
Food variety. We're targeting social interaction. We're targeting the expression of a positive mindset, not necessarily the experience of a positive mindset. We're targeting time on task or time on work or completion of work. There's just a lot. We're targeting kind of everything, right?
Well, she's a complex kid.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, not judging.
So I want to make sure that we got all our bases covered.
Yeah. You want to be thorough. Yeah. Man. I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Cool. And then, I mean, we do some time-based.
What do the prizes look like? So like how many tokens does she need before she cashes out?
So it's roughly like if we're looking at like a dollar exchange, each token's about a nickel.
Okay. She needs like 20.
Yeah, if she wants like a ring pop or something. But then we've also got she's got a My Little Pony toy that she's been saving up for. It's like $12 worth of tokens. She hasn't gotten anywhere near what she needs to get it, but she said she really wants it. So
she can bank keep it too. On there.
Yeah, no. And we
priced out menu.
Oh yeah. Yep. Okay. And we've got
she collects those dollars.
Yeah. And she's got a visual for it all set up in her room. Okay. So she knows
wants to spend, and then she gets to bank the rest of the cash.
Yeah.
And then as she's banking that cash, and approximately how frequently is she accessing those cashing out opportunities?
Depends on the day. I mean, some days I can hardly get her to talk to me.
100 times?
One, sometimes 15, other times.
Awesome. Okay.
Fantastic. I do try and encourage her to get back on task when she is off task during our sessions to earn some more tokens. So every couple of minutes, I remind her of the expectation. Hey Caitlin, we can earn some more tokens. We can get that My Little Pony. Sure. That paired with the fact that she doesn't like any praise, it can kind of escalate things sometimes, but we're working through it.
Do you still give it to her even though she doesn't like it? Like, do you kind of like, are you like, hey, I think you did great, even though you hate that I'm saying this?
Well, yeah, I want a behavior specific praise. I mean, yeah, that's
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. The pairing procedure, I usually sit next to her while she's playing Roblox. I'll smile along ask her about her Roblox character.
You think she likes you?
She doesn't really like anyone.
I know, but do you think she likes you?
I mean, I'm anyone.
You think?
I mean, there have been days where we've had to cancel service just because she kind of
looks at your face
and says, "I'm coming." But that's just because I'm one of the few people who, outside of direct family, who she has to engage with regularly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, necessary evil.
Okay, man. Whew.
Oh, and then we do our social stories as well. So I try and make the stories based on things that she likes. So we have had some My Little Pony themed social stories to talk about making friends, dealing with anxiety, that sort of thing.
Love My Little Pony.
Yeah, she does too.
Yeah. Who doesn't, right?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't call myself a brony per se, but I definitely am. I'm an 80s kid, so I gotta love the My Little Ponies. Okay. Whew, there's a lot going on here, bud. And I want to make sure that I tackle this, and I want to make sure I'm sensitive to what you got going on. So actually, before I do, tell me, what's your background a little bit, if you don't mind me asking? How'd you get here, man? Montana, BCBA, not a lot of those running around. Talk to me.
Yeah, so I got my start out in California. I worked with early learners before this, actually. So this is a bit new for me. Okay. I never worked with someone this old. Most of my learners up to this point, teaching them to use AAC devices, PECs, basic manding, tacting.
Got it.
That sort of stuff. Running through the ables.
Here's what I would say, Mark. I think that you're doing a tremendous job trying to bring the tools that you have at your disposal to deal with this case. I think you're absolutely right. This is a pretty weird and complicated case. I think she's got some stuff going on that kind of falls outside of the normal thing that we do here, especially when you're talking about the embarrassment kind of seeming like it's functionally driving things. And like, how do we translate embarrassment in behavior analytic terms, right? How do we really treat anxiety in that way? And those are conceptually difficult ideas. Not saying you're not capable of it. What I would say is that you are doing what you're supposed to do and expanding your scope. And I think what I'd like to do here, if you're okay with it, is just kind of step in a little bit and help you do that. Help facilitate the expansion of your scope into this kind of an age range. Because the one thing I learned, because I started out with little ones too first, and when I first started doing this and then kind of grew my scope out, is that one of the first things that I noticed is one of the hardest parts of working with more sophisticated learners and just older kids was dropping some of the more procedural rigidity that we have and that we really, really hone in on an EIBI. And that's a really hard habit to break because that goes against all of our training, all of our expectations, and kind of violates some of the basic rules that you get as you're coming up. So if you would accept this, I'd really like to just kind of maybe help guide you through this process a little bit. I'm obviously not your supervisor and you don't have to do anything I gotta tell you, but just kind of like go with me and kind of go with the flow with me on this a little bit and let me kind of help, you know, facilitate this kind of new knowledge base and kind of expansion of what you already got going on. Is that something that you think you'd be okay with and you'd come along with me on?
Well, I mean, mom and dad was the ones who called you here, not me. So
I know, but let's be honest, I'm an outside observer here. Well, hold on. No. That's not good enough. Listen, I'm an outside observer here. I'm here as a second opinion. I can't force you to do your job in a different way, and I'm not going to shoehorn it down your throat or make you do anything. When it's all said and done, I'm going to leave at some point, and you're going to be here with these people. So, like, I want to make sure that you and I are on the same page and have an honest and professional, interprofessional collaborative relationship here that really, like, really maybe becomes a long-term thing where maybe we can use each other for resources here. So all I'm asking for is keeping an open mind and just kind of like let me talk through this stuff a little bit and just be willing to maybe give it a shot. And here's what else I would ask you and encourage you to. As we're doing this, question me and ask questions and question me. Okay. I love the little bit of resistance because I think that's how we really get to the nitty gritty of what we're trying to do here. Does that seem like something that would be worthwhile for you?
If you've got some ideas, I'd love to hear them.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, man. I think the first thing I would say is we got to drop the zones of regulation for a lot of different reasons. She doesn't like talking about emotions. So why are we making her do that? Number two.
Because she needs to. Emotions are a thing.
You're absolutely right. And she should talk about her feelings in a functional and in a contextually appropriate way with natural opportunities to do that. What I would say with zones of regulations, all zones of regulation really is from a behavioral point of intervention is a tacting program. We've already identified the fact that she can accurately identify what the emotions are and what she's experiencing. The question isn't, can she identify or tact her emotions? The question is, can she socially appropriately respond and react to her emotions in the moment based on what's happening in real time? So I would say that it's kind of breaking a basic generalization rule that kind of matters here, right? It's not really getting us to generalization and then long-term novel performance or generative performance of emotional self-awareness, which is the whole point of the exercise. And that's what you're trying to get to. So I think it's already served its purpose and it's already run its course in terms of what you're trying to accomplish with it. I think it's just time to just to clamp it down and just move on and shift our focus really on social behavior, really targeting that, really breaking down that idea of embarrassment and these anxiolytic components that we're talking about and how maybe some of the rigidity from the autism might be feeding it. And then kind of reworking a little bit some of our contingencies in the behavior plan to really focus on reinforcing and targeting the explicit responses we're looking for. Does that make sense?
I mean, I kind of thought that if she were fluent with the zones that we'd be in the clear here.
Okay. And I hear you. And here's what I would ask you. Like, I mean, stark raving mad. Like, do you have a significant other or a loved one that you love more than anything in the world, but that person is able to touch you in an emotional place where you maybe lose consciousness for a moment out of pure rage?
I mean, sometimes, but okay, that's what we're working on with Caitlin. So
hold on. I know that. But my saying is that when you're in that emotional state, in that emotional space, let's just say you can say red, you're still experiencing the rageful moment. And you're still potentially acting out or lashing out in a way that doesn't get you what you want, right?
But socially inappropriate. But once she outcomes. she knows red is the danger zone, so she's got coping skills to identify once she's hit that zone and she's identified she's in it. She can reference those coping skills that we've talked about. Right, I've told her about deep breaths.
And what does the data tell you?
I mean, again, she hasn't mastered this program. She only performs at 100% when she wants to. Man. So we got to just ride it out.
Here's what I would say to you. Here's what I would say to you. If anything, the data tells you what's working and what's not working. The data is saying that it's working and teaching her how to tact emotions. It's not working and teaching her how to regulate emotions.
Well, it's because we're only on chapter 3.
Okay. I mean, maybe, but I mean, that's like your opinion, man.
Yeah, but behavior change is like a slow process.
It is a slow process. But the question is the zones of regulations creating contingencies around those particular emotional expressions?
I mean,
if behavior is selected by consequences, then we need to establish contingencies around the particular outcomes we're looking for. The outcome is intact.
She gets tokens.
The socially appropriate things. I understand she gets tokens, but we haven't gotten to that part yet. So I don't want to really belabor the point on the zones of regulation, because when we get to the next part, I think it'll all start wrapping together and making sense. And I don't necessarily want to change your mind on that. I'm just trying to point out in general, the one thing I think that's missing in this whole thing, just like if we're looking for this golden thread that connects all these things, is functional equivalence of intervention to problem behaviors. Okay. Now we're not having done an FA. We haven't done an PFA or ISCA or whatever they want to call it. Now, we haven't done functional analysis of any kind to establish a clear-cut functional relation, but just based on the structured interview, based on the events that you describe, and based on the reality of her situation, I think we have enough to at least identify and isolate the particular things we really want to go to. And here's the second thing I would say. Zones of regulation aside, whenever we have a behavior plan, I mean, you want to have clearly defined targets, right? So I think you're on the right track, honestly, with some of the things with some of these targets in terms of the spirit of them. What I want to do is really tease out the specifics So those particular targets are actually saying and reinforcing and praising or whatever, rewarding the things we really, really, really need to target for her. The other thing I would say is that that might just mean really honing in on them and maybe cutting them back a little bit to get over time to those bigger picture ideas that you're talking about. I mean, I think that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it only happens like once a month. It's really hard to target those specific times when I'm here 10 hours a week.
If you commit a felony once a month, you going to prison?
Yeah, but I'm just talking about like as a behavior analyst trying to work on this behavior. It's just so infrequent.
How frequently does she interact with other people or does she not want to interact with other people?
I mean, every
time you guys said.
Yeah. I mean, at least five days a week when it comes to school.
Time out. Then maybe I would say the real problem here isn't actually the aggressive episodes. Those are just a byproduct of the real problem, which is her social avoidance.
I mean,
is that a fair thing to look at?
Yeah, fair.
Okay. So let's talk about social avoidance then. Let's really hone in on that. Let's define social avoidance. And then let's set up our contingencies to explicitly target that and get to the root of the problem. I mean, and that's the thing that I'm trying to get at. And I'm sorry if I'm being cavalier with you. I don't mean to be rude or hyperbolic. It just helps me as a conversational technique to kind of get you where I need you to go and what I'm trying to express here. And I'm a little bit sarcastic sometimes. So I think once you get to know me, you'll appreciate my shenanigans as cheeky and fun and not horrible and tragic. But I mean, what I'm trying to get at here is that, okay, we have this behavior plan, we've focused on emotions, but the reality is we have these explosive episodes, but we know these explosive episodes are mostly related to forced social interaction. So the question is, not even just the anxiety, because that's a chicken or the egg problem, right? We're behavior analysts, we're not mentalists. It's really more like, how does that anxiety present itself in the natural environment? And that's through this social withdrawal and social avoidance. So if in this situation, social quote unquote reinforcers are the anti-reinforcer, I don't know if they're punishing, but they're definitely like aversive, coercive, even at times, and she's reactive to them, then we really have a tolerance problem here. She cannot tolerate other people to a degree that is socially functional. Again, this isn't forcing social relationships on people. And that's one of the things that I think we're going to have to talk about with mom in particular. Where I think
she really wants her to have friends.
Huh?
She really wants her to have friends.
And I think that that's possible. But I think what the conversation we're going to have is we need to even have the pre-skills and the capacity to be around people to even get to the point where we're even talking about having friends. So it's more like reframing things with mom. It's like, hey, friends is step 15. I think we need to really backtrack and really look at step one really closely and say, where are we in terms of being to effectively tolerate being around other people in a way that it doesn't negatively emotionally impact us over time so that it leads to this cathartic episode?
I mean, she does have a tolerance for it during equine therapy day. So, I mean, she's got it.
Awesome. If only we could get her riding a horse around everywhere. Fortunately, Pony Express went down in flames a long time ago. So we're in a situation where that's not going to work. It's not a viable solution, but I hear you. I love horses too. Like I said, I think they're beautiful animals. I mean, you hear me, right? Like, I'm not trying to be dismissive here, but I mean, we got to be realistic too, right?
I mean, I guess.
Did you ride a horse to work today?
No, but I mean, okay. This is Montana. It's not unreasonable that,
we got cars in Montana, bro. Anyway, all right. You're a jokester. We're on the same page.
I didn't mean it like that. I meant,
you're with me.
I mean, getting a horse on their property, it's not out of the question.
You're with me. I get it. You get it. Okay, you're with me. So let's talk about that and let's go through it. So here's what I would say. I would ask you, let's strip down the plan and really hone in on like two expectations that really matter here. Okay. If you really want to keep the token economy system, I'm actually more inclined to say chuck the token economy system across the board and just give her something just like for free neutrally, because I feel like the token economy system might baby things up a little bit and that might not be a thing that she actually needs to be functional. But for now, that's my job isn't to really totally rework everything here. It's just to really, how do we you know, maybe functionalize the tools that we're using. And if you want to keep that, because I agree with you, it seems like the schedule might be helpful, might be a way for you to actually manage the parents' behavior a little bit too, keep them on track, keep them moving steady. I can see that a purpose there that I think you kind of had a good intuition about that's worthwhile. Thanks. Especially given the fact that they're on a different page, man. Like, you're trying to manage two people with two different opinions. Yeah. The only really way to do that is to at least give them a shared procedure that they're, that, you know, they're forced to adhere to, you know, so that they can show that they're, you know, doing something. I think that the question then really is about how do we have that procedure set up so that it's getting enough success that they can buy into it over time, that will actually buy you the goodwill and the trust to do some of the other things that you're talking about.
Cool.
Okay. So I would say let's strip down the token plan and let's just, rather than even have tokens, let's keep the board. Let's keep the schedule. Let's just award the coins on a running tally for stuff. And I would just say intermittently throughout the day on no particular ratio, get when it's a great time and she did something really spectacular, offer those cash outs and try to really up the ante a little bit. I mean, I think you were saying she was getting those cash out opportunities one time a day. That's obviously not enough repetition to both contact success, but also failure, right? I mean, if you're on a situation, yeah. So like we need to increase the failures while also increasing the successes. We can't just have like one failure just like totally droop down the whole day, right?
Yeah.
So fair. I would flip it to maybe like an hourly basis. You know, do a check-in. Hey, you did a great job, or half an hour on a, you know, general variable schedule. It makes kind of sense. You know, I'm not going to dictate that for you because I don't know those specifics. I mean, you kind of think about that from your worldview. Like, you know, what would be a good timeline to where maybe I've got her on like a 30 to 60 minute clip where I've got her cashing out for these things. Okay. Just around figures. Maybe it's 15. I don't know. You think about that, but maybe think of it more in terms of like getting lots of opportunities. Okay. Built in. And catching her doing a good job. Now let's define what that means, because that's the next part of this. I would definitely drop. Hold on, let me review this part here. So we had the positive statements, we had the social interactions, we had the doing work thing. And what was the other thing?
Trying new things.
Okay, trying
new things. Balls.
Right. So I would say let's pick a problem, because we got trying new things is a food problem. Trying positive statements is an emotional expression problem. Social interactions is a social problem. And then what was that fourth thing again? Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Work is a demands problem. So we're operating on a whole spherical thing here that each one of those things in and of themselves matters. Again, you said it yourself, complexity, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So when you're building too much complexity, too many parameters in your decision here, you muddy the water. I would say let's pare it down and reestablish that complexity over time. If we're already identifying that the social problem is really the big problem, not just in terms of how she's reacting with going to school and being around other people, but also in terms of like her parents' desire, right? The social validity aspect of this. Mom really wants her to make friends and dad doesn't really care about it. But I think dad would be happy if mom was happy, which would bring some peace and harmony into their household. Okay. Yeah. Then we really shift our mindset and focus to that. And that's our just general thing that we're looking for. So then that means all we really have to do is really do a good job defining what do we mean by, let's just say, good social exchanges. And I like the idea, and I like, go, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So here's the thing is I give her the list of names that mom and dad have on in their phone for play dates. She's never showed really any interest in any of them. So even a jumping off point has been.
Well, here's what I would say to you. I don't even think we're there.
Okay.
Because you just admitted to me yourself when I was asking you, she hates your face sometimes. You have to cancel your thing sometimes, right?
Yeah, most of the time.
Okay, a lot. So, I mean, like, why don't we focus on, number one, repairing that relationship between the two of you? But number two, setting the precedent and the contingency for just social exchanges not being this emotionally, socially aversive, coercive thing. So we've got to do a little bit of unwinding before we can even go back to rebuilding these skills, okay? So let's do it with Hugh. Let's do it with Mom. Let's do it with Dad. Let's get some clean social exchanges going on where that interaction is that interaction results in just a clean, positive terminal endpoint, right? And I would say that's about, let's really strip that down and just look at it as volleys. We want to look, if she engages in one clean conversational volley, right? And if we're going to talk about this from a verbal behavioral point of view or a social behavior point of view, we know verbal behavior involves a listener and a speaker. Social behavior involves a signaler and a receiver, right? And we know that those behaviors are bidirectional. Social interaction goes two ways. It's a you and a me. There's two people involved, right? It's not just like a manned program where it's me. It's me and you, okay? So I would say if we get a singular conversational volley that's clean, that terminates very nicely, you give her that. You don't, again, accommodating the fact that she feels really embarrassed, you just do some neutral like, hey, I really appreciate that you did that. You just thank her. And then you just say, hey, take your time and make a choice if you'd like. We're going to bank some points and spend some points. And so, give her the choice and the option.
She will respond to me when I ask how her day was. Do I give her a token for that?
Yeah.
Or tally? Great.
Hey, thank. Yeah. And again, don't praise her. Thank her. Okay. Just thank her for this. Thank her for the social engagement. So that way you're acknowledging it, but you're not necessarily putting the spotlight or the focus on her in a way that might kind of initiate that embarrassment response.
Okay.
Okay.
And what happens when she doesn't talk back after that? Like, that's, I feel fine. Like I'm talking at a wall.
Just move on. And the other thing I would say is that don't push her and don't pressure her to converse with you, but don't leave also. So this is where it's going to take a lot of discipline on your part to really deal with the tolerance piece of this. Okay. And this is where like silence is your weapon. It's going to, and this is when you were talking about before about, you know, you guys trying to reassure her and doing all this stuff. Too much talking just seems to exacerbate the situation and exaggerate things. And it also really, really negatively, it's in opposition to the reality, or at least it is, it punishes. It does. It's punishing. It's coercive. It's aversive to be adding that, knowing that that is the thing she's trying to avoid. So if you present it, you get that, but she does the shutdown. Just make sure you stay in her presence and very neutrally and nonchalantly try to engage every little bit, 30 seconds, a minute, and just continually make those attempts and just don't let her get away from you, but don't necessarily shove it down her throat.
What if she tells me to go away or stop?
Just say, okay, no problem. I'll stop for a minute. Like you recognize, you acknowledge it. You give her that affirmation that she wants and you give her what she wants, but then you tweak it to where you say, okay, I'll stop for a certain period of time.
What if she just keeps saying stop every time?
Great.
And I try.
Keep doing it.
So, I mean, we just do a whole session where
it's fine.
She says, I don't want to talk to you for
that's perfect.
three hours.
What we're looking for here, and this is where the tolerance piece of this comes into play. What you're looking for is a break in daylight and a way to slowly shrink that down to where she's at least willing to talk to you and to shorter and shorter intervals to where it's kind of like at least in a way where it's civil and it's back and forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You kind of hear what I'm saying here? Because this is the whole thing, man. Like, you guys don't have a relationship. And we're talking about pairing. Okay, going back to the idea.
I mean, I've been on this case for a while.
Yeah. So that's why I think you're also lost in the weeds, brother. I think you're just beat up. So I don't think you can really see the forest or the streets because you're too much in the thick of it, too. So that's why I'm asking you to kind of bring it back. All right? Part of what pairing is, let's go back to what does pairing really mean? Pairing means pairing yourself as a reinforcing stimulus. Like that's the rest of the phrase that we just leave out. So we've already established that you're not necessarily a reinforcing stimulus. So like you need to, number one, associate yourself with reinforcing consequences relative to the particular target behavior that we're focusing on, which is functionally creating the problems that we're looking at. Okay. And that involves slowly and slowly and slowly engaging in more and more opportunities of that, where you can get that stimulus pairing effect. Does that make sense? And then once you have that, I think we reevaluate and we talk about building it up to more complexity. But until you can break through that wall, until you break through that wall, you're going to be exactly where you are, exactly the way it is, exactly with what's going on. So if you're comfortable with the status quo, let's not do that. But if you aren't comfortable with status quo, we need to shift gears.
Gotcha. Yeah. Let's give it a shot.
Perfect. All right, man. I really appreciate your time. And if there's anything you need, I mean, we'll just touch base in a few weeks or later this month. Sound good?
Cool.
Perfect. All right, let's go talk to mom and dad and let's lay it out for them.
All righty.
You made it. This is the point in which you can pause. Think about what you maybe would have done differently. Think if there's any themes throughout this as well. We're going to break character here and this just turns into a typical podcast where it's just an open discussion. I hope you enjoy.
Open discussion. Where do we start?
So what was kind of your first read of Mark and what was going to be the initial push through to start getting him on your side? Because he was a little hostile initially.
I think Mark represents to me like the avatar archetype of an inexperienced behavior analyst who has been doing it long enough to know that EIBI gets boring forever, but not long enough to have actually experienced some of the confounds that come with complexity and sophisticated learners, if that makes sense.
It does.
And I think professionally, you know, I'm not going to obviously speak for everybody, but I think professionally there's a period of time. There's like this Dunning-Kruger effect that BCBAs go through where they know enough to be dangerous, but in reality, they don't know what they don't know. And they think they're more competent than they actually are. So that when they're actually getting questioned, it creates a high level of defensiveness, a high level of reactivity, and a lot of walls go up.
So
go ahead.
Well, he's in a very rural spot. He's kind of siloed. What does one exposure to this kind of discourse look like for an individual like that who is siloed? And two, what is the habituation to that look like? Like how is Mark supposed to have experienced
to learn
this? Sorry,
how does Mark get good?
Yeah, like how does Mark, I don't know, get good and also make friends, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole, like, I mean, dude, there's no clean answer to those questions, right? I mean, everything's going to be like, get online and make friends and talk to your community. But even then, a lot of the online forums aren't really helpful because if we're looking at the growth of the field disproportionately to the amount of people with this kind of level of experience, there's a disproportional amount of people, generationally speaking, that are certified that are in that Dunning-Kruger zone than are actually capable of providing functional, practical advice. So I hesitate to say get online, but you always got to start somewhere. So get online and start looking for answers. The other thing, which is, it's kind of not a practical answer, but I give it anyway, is, I mean, I would probably question how much Mark's actually done any reading. And I don't just mean applied reading, but just reading on these kinds of problems. You know, like the idea of like a comparative psychological examination of problems and stepping outside of that and just looking at the issue, not as a behavior analyst necessarily would, but just as in general, how that problem presents in society across people's experiences, psychology, sociology, social work, whatever. Even like a biologist might even think about it, like an evolutionary person, like really just looking to see, okay, how much of a problem is this? What are the different ways people look at this? And then learning that you can translate things into behavior analytic lenses, but you can take ideas from those other disciplines or those other things. Now,
yeah,
that takes a lot of discipline and practice, and it's super hard to do, but that's the skill that I think is, you know, we're talking about. Sorry.
I think that's where Mark really dropped the ball in terms of parent buy-in was the over-reliance on the science and not necessarily applying the science. So a lot more talking at parents than talking to them. And less of a understanding of the client and more an understanding of behavior and riffing off that rather than individualizing it.
I'm with you until it's talking about behavior. I actually don't think he was looking at behavior. I think he was looking at his agenda of efficacy.
I mean, I guess
behavior, he'd be looking at functional relations, right? Like it was pretty obvious out of the gate that the function of the behavior was avoidance, but it was social avoidance and all the topographical expressions that the person was engaging in were all related to that particular social avoidance. So like, if none of the interventions were designed to target social avoidance, they were all about, how do I say my feelings? Am I being a good girl? Do I do my work? Like, do I eat other kinds of food? Like,
yeah.
Like, so that if we're talking, even the most basic Cooper, fresh, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed person, I just passed my test, should be able to say, oh, I need a functional, interventions should be functionally equivalent. So I think Mark went in with this, like, and this is, and I'm sorry, I just got to say this. It's one of those things where it's like, you get overzealous because you have so much just like bursting from you and you want to share it with the world. And as a result, yeah. You start to get too fancy in simple ways. And those simple, quote unquote, they're not actually fancy. They end up being just a hodgepodge of stuff that don't have any like cohesion. And well, they're not conceptually systematic.
Well, I think too, though, if you think about it, he came from EIBI, which is pretty like repetitive and to the point. You're doing the same stuff. And then he came and he was like, oh, this kid doesn't go to school. The parents wanted to have friends. The parents wanted to do academics. There's these big behaviors. There's anxiety. I think Mark was overwhelmed.
Fair.
And didn't know how to organize the goals.
I'm being super critical. That's fair. That's a much fairer interpretation of Mark's reality. You're right, Daniel. You always ground these things.
Well, no. Okay, Dimitri. I think it can be both.
But the complexity of the case came through at various points as we're working on all these different things. And at least we tried to have somewhat of like a unified reinforcement system, even if it wasn't effective. But that does create the question of, well, where are those domains in which we're going to look first? Which was that addressing the avoidance piece and kind of building up from simple volleys and redefining what is actually going to be reinforcing attention.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, relief.
Yeah.
And I also think that's
a super nuanced point of view too, in all fairness. Sorry, Max.
No worries. I think that Mark dropped the ball in not leaning into the parent training side of things a bit more with the infrequency of the behavior. I think a lot of the work that needs to be done is in how the parents engage with their child. And I think Mark was kind of the mindset, if I teach them what reinforcement is and I teach them what schedules of reinforcement are, we'll see the change we need to see, without really showing the parents what that means in the context of their child.
I always go back to functional equivalence, man. Like, if the idea is parent training, if the idea is skill building, so skill training, if the function of a behavior analyst in any kind of home programming or any kind of like consultative capacity like this is to solve a problem, they have to be able to identify the problem very clearly and define it. So going back to this Ruby thing or even the parent training, I think he was leaning in parent training. I think the intuition would have been right to lean into parent training. And I agree with Danielle that the problem was the application and the content of that parent training.
Agreed.
Like, the parent training should have been designed around, how do I facilitate appropriate social interactions and effective social exchanges, right? How do I build those particular, like, relationship building, and what does that really mean, and really honing in on those things and not really getting lost in, do these parents know what reinforcement is and can they run my token economy system? Because but honestly, that's a fair critique for a lot of the home programs and a lot of the different trainings that we have, is that like this hyper proceduralization kind of loses the fact that you can actually teach clean procedures through just natural opportunities of interactions and treating social interactions as the contingencies that they are without having to interject rigid procedures.
And I think parents typically absorb that and are more engaged with that
100%
than rigid procedures.
I totally agree with you. 100%. Good stuff. I like how you guys try to stump me. I had you figured out really quick. This is the best you can do. Are you not entertained?
This is warm up, brother. This is warm up.
I know.
All right.
I'm going to be honest.
This is just a nice 45 mile an hour pitch straight down the center for you.
I'm just teasing.
Just lobbing it.
The zones of regulation thing, I'm not gonna lie, you guys really hit me.
When you said red, I was entertained. Red.
Red. I used to work with a kid that would scream his zone while he was beating the living bejesus. I mean, it's been my life. Yeah. So like, I've seen that actually happen in real life. I was like, oh, I'm red. Boom, right in the face. And it's like, okay,
how do you feel? Angrier now that you're getting in my face asking me how I feel. Right.
How would you redesign, or like, would you completely throw zones regulation in the trash, or would there be a redesign option for something like that?
I think that behavior analysis, the science of human nature, human living, being, okay? When you are being, you are just, you are in the moment, right? That's what we talk about, Steve Hayes, right? Mindfulness. Well, that means that when you're being mindful and you're being super present, you're not hyper aware, and you don't necessarily demonstrate the natural capacity to express emotions in that instance. Now, you take that and then you just look at the reality of someone who is experiencing some kind of chronic crisis reality where they have hyper expressions of their emotions. And then you want to say that because they can tact it, theoretically now they should be able to exert that degree of self-control on whatever impulsive action they're about to engage in this hyper emotional state that they're being. So I think that goes and here's the thing, that literally goes contrary to what we know in the science of impulsivity and behavioral economics. We have these studies, we have the research, and we have the literature on this. And the reality is the only way to bend curves is social pressure and prior commitment effects. Those are verbal rules. Tacting and self-awareness is a byproduct. It's not an exercise of coping skills. Okay. So like, while I think there might be some value in teaching recognition of emotions in terms of some kind of like building social interactions and seeing it on others, right? So I can identify sadness because maybe that's a social deficit. You can sell me on that, maybe. Okay, I'm there. Okay, sure. But in terms of it being a thing that leads to coping skills, literally the literature says you're wrong. Not me, Richard Thaler, Nobel Prize winning behavioral economist, does. Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky say you're wrong. Nobel Prize winning behavioral scientists say you're wrong. Not me. Okay. So I just don't know if we're talking about it in terms of programming. Are we just talking about filler then at this point? Like, why not build a program? And here's the thing. Why not build a program that really is more structured to facilitate natural expressions between two people, right? So rather than proceduralizing it intellectually and knowing that you have specific targets you're going to teach to, but expressing that with the other person in a way where they don't know it's happening because they're just there with another person and they're experiencing what clean, awesome, real social engagement feels like, right? Going back to those feelings. So that means they're experiencing that emotional safety. They're not tacting it. They're experiencing it. They're experiencing you being very hyper aware of their emotional state, and you're showing them how to appropriately withdraw and modeling that response in that safe, controlled social interaction, right? To me, the actual behavior, the behavior itself, the living those things in this bidirectional social exchange is behavior analytic in terms of and functionally necessary and functionally purposeful, rather than this targeting of a verbal operant under the guise of it producing that outcome. That's what I'm really saying. So again, you're asking me, is that a super nuanced point of view? Maybe. Is that being hypercritical or dismissive of someone's work out there who's selling zones of regulation? Possibly. And I would love to give them the opportunity to convince me otherwise. I might be wrong. But just as a behavior analyst looking at this problem behavior analytically and then functionally, it doesn't produce the results that it purports to. And even in your case, which I came in completely blind on, everything you said, it produced the effect that I'm describing, not the outcomes that you desired.
And just to be clear, Mark said that, not me.
Okay, well, yeah, the proverbial you. And then again, if we're talking about being data-based analysts, right, the data of the training through this skill paradigm was telling you that it wasn't producing the effect that you were looking for. So if you're being behavior analytic, what do you do in response to the data? You adjust your strategy. Well, in this case, the strategy adjustment is to move on. So that's my reaction. That's why I had kind of like that, you know, and mostly because I know the reality of what that is in schools and how it's used. And it ends up being this socially coercive thing where someone's getting upset and they're just being told to, you know, express their zone. And that in no way, shape or form really highlights the reality and targets what the person needs, which is a way to work through the very visceral experience that is happening to them in that moment. Life is happening. And when life is happening, you don't need to tact it. You need to figure out a way to functionally work through it and get through it to be on the other side. Anyway, sorry, I got my little high horse going. You worked me up on those goddamn zones of regulation.
Talk about horses again.
And the equine therapy.
Can I?
Equine therapy, by the way, was a landmine that I know you guys wanted me to step in. And I was like, no, we're not even going there. I'm just going to make subtle backhand comments so we can laugh about.
Well, she loved it, okay? Hey,
I'm sure she did.
Hey, it gets her to school.
Gets her to school.
Oh, man, that was one of those identify critical variables versus just like ancillary things that you don't need to really focus on. And that was a non-critical variable.
What made you think it's non-critical?
Are you? Is this another one of those like?
Let's go there. Because
we need YouTube so, words? So what I'd like to do here, without like purposely making you get into spots that are tough and like piss people off, I was just kind of curious if we can kind of pluck out little 5 to 8 minute lessons of why you decided to do what you did. That's all.
I decided to not address the equine therapy because it happens so infrequently that it's not, let's just assume that it is a good enough carrot to get her to school because it's on a fixed schedule and it's so infrequent. It's not valuable as a contingency. Number one, number two, or like as a reward for a contingency of going for contingency going to school. Number two, I mean, it's just James Mulick and Richard Fox wrote a book, you know, all the controversial therapies of autism and developmental disabilities. Equine therapy is in there. I mean, there's enough literature and research to know that as a therapy, it's not therapy because everybody loves animals. At least the people that do love animals and they especially love horses. And who doesn't appreciate that? And, you know, yeah, it's fun. It's great. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful expression of freedom. It's pure Americana. It's all this stuff with great social and cultural validity and value and even recreational value. It in terms of it having a therapeutic value, it's a non thing. It's not there. So I just, you know, you hear it, you accept it. You can't do anything with it as a tool. You smile and you move to the stuff you can play with and you can monitor, change. And you go from there.
Mark would argue that you could use it as a tool because that's how we got the idea for the My Little Ponies on the token board.
Cool. And I would ask Mark, does she like horses because she can ride them? Or does she like horses because they fly over rainbows?
He wouldn't know because she never earned the My Little Pony.
That's the right answer.
When it looks at two parents with two kind of vastly different perspectives or just different kind of goals for where this is going to go, what does, especially if you have the opportunity while you're flipping the script on this plan, what does ameliorating that situation look like?
That was a nice caveat you guys put in there, right? The two parents with different opinions. That's so common though, right? Mm-hmm. 96% divorce rate with people who have kids with special needs. So it's a hell of a lot more common for people to, for parents to disagree than to agree in these situations. So, I think what you do is you just try to find the one place that they both agree, and you continually go back to how much they both love their kid. You know, I mean, the general conversation, because I mean, like, I did a bunch of conversational control things that most of us are not really explicitly taught of. So, for example, in the introduction, when I first walked in, you know, Mark was, he showed hesitation. He expressed surprise. His tone of voice was kind of distant and defensive. The second he found out I was a behavior analyst, it was very obvious that he was not aware that I was coming, and he was super taken back by it in a way that was not good. Okay. So what did I do? I cut through the tension, and I just took control of it. And I just did what thing what salespeople do this. They assume the sale. Okay. And I just said exactly what I was there to do, exactly why. I specifically focused on how it was by the parent's request, and it's for the good of the case, and it's for the good of the child, and that we're here to work together. And I'd be happy to just sit aside and let him do his job, and then really appreciate the opportunity to talk to him. Right. So I kind of forced him into a box where we were able to avoid, where we kind of forced any confrontation seeking or anything like that. And I would get the opportunity to accomplish the goal that I was there to accomplish. And then if there was going to be any tension or potentially, like, you know, heavy, heavy resistance, sure, or maybe he's like, he doesn't like me or whatever, it becomes an interpersonal conflict of some kind, we can deal with that under a more optimal situation and circumstance with maybe the parents present. So that maybe gets tamped down too. So it's just a way to put a lid on it, get in there, get him at least cooperative enough to get some of the information before we can get in a situation we can actually, you know, really uncover what's going on.
Sure. Yeah.
And then the same thing went on with the whole buy-in with him throughout the board, is that, like, it's a common thing in sales, which is like, you want to start getting people to yes as much as possible. And then we know this from behavior analysis, right? Behavioral momentum theory is about getting small approximations of the terminal response you want to see. That is literally the definition of behavioral momentum, right? We get these little small successive approximations to the point where we start getting the behavior that we want to see, right? Pre-MAC, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's what I was doing. It was like, you start looking for little things he'll say yes to. And then as you get the little yeses, you start compounding to bigger and bigger yeses. And then that's how the Jedi mind trick of it all works, is that you start getting yeses now because you've created this open flow of just receptiveness, even though consciously, and I say consciously, people are gonna be like, oh, consciously. But I mean, like, if he were allowed to pause for a moment and defend himself and not just be caught up in that momentum wheel that you kind of just pushed him in, he would probably start pushing back again. You can get him at least to initially say yes, and then it's almost impossible for someone to take back, because that violates a bunch of social conventions. And, like, you now have painted them into social civility standards to where they have to cooperate. Now, some people might think that's manipulative or whatever, but that's just, at some point in time, you know, if you're going to be effective and you can tell out of the gate, I mean, I literally, the second I said the word social avoidance, you can go back wherever the track is. You know, I was thinking about 2 or 3 minutes before I even said it. The problem was obvious, and the fact that it was being missed was obvious. But if you're there to consult with him, you can't necessarily put the kibosh on it out of the gate and just embarrass him, humiliate him either. So it's all about getting those small yeses before you get to the end. And then affirmations. You can get with that, right? You can get with that, right? What do you think about that, right? And then you're nodding, right? So then you're providing a model of the actual physical behavior you want to see the person doing. So you're actually showing them what you want them to do. Okay. And then additionally at that, you're giving verbal affirmation of the thing that you want. So you're vocally modeling how they're supposed to respond to you socially. And then over time, if it's based on lower and lower stakes, just game theoretically, they're going to start responding yes to you.
I see some car salesman Dimitri coming through.
Yeah, I sold a lot of whips back in the day.
I know you did.
So that's just how it goes. People are,
get them to say yes.
We're sheep, man. So, I mean, like, it's just like, we're using our superpowers here for, you know, the light side of the force.
Well, and you did good with the parents by talking about, like, you're the safe space and making sure that they felt comfortable, and they both agreed on that and came together after that. Yeah. I thought you did a good, really good damage control.
Sometimes
there.
Drawing that temp check of your relationship with your kids is such a unique thing that it's really hard for people outside of this circle to understand what that dynamic looks like. Can even just promote feeling seen or understood for folks that can, I keep saying siloed, but are kind of siloed in their circumstance. So that I like that as a powerful illumination to kind of get that buy-in and point them in the right direction as well.
Yeah. You know, it's the number one thing is with tension. Okay. With tension, hesitation, buy-in. I mean, one of the greatest psychological sin that people are trained to do in our field, or really social fields in general, is to avoid directness, actually. I mean, people appreciate, whether or not they feel it in the moment or not, if you cut through the tension immediately and go directly to confronting what you perceive and is most, what most likely is the thing dividing the two of you, and you're able to flip that frame, okay, you're, number one, take them off guard, because general social conventions in Western societies in particular actually are non-confrontational. So any degree of directness is seen as confrontational. So people aren't prepared to be resistant because you knocked them off guard. Okay. Now, by knocking them off guard, then you've opened a window of opportunity to fill that dead space and that dead air. And then what you say in that dead space and that dead air helps you reframe the perspective that is important and helps you guide the conversation to the particular end game that you want to start getting your foot in the door and wedging those yeses that I was talking about. So whenever you start experiencing resistance, what the kind of questions you should start asking then are small, subtle questions that really will give you a, let you pinpoint what the actual pain point is, not pinpoint the pain point. Okay. Identify where that resistance is. And if you can target it and say it right, people will think you're pulling some kind of mentalism cold read on them, but in reality, you're really targeting a function. Why, you know, you're targeting why they're behaving in a way where, are they perceiving you as denying them access of, you know, or denying them control of social control or whatever, denying that, that particular thing that they're resisting. And if you can cut through the resistance and reframe it, you can start softening those guards and show that you're a good conversational reciprocal actor. Cause that's the other thing too. So if we're talking about social behavior, okay, and we're talking about buy-in, we're talking about how do I take a person who's resistant or defecting from the social game that we're engaging in, and how do I flip them into a cooperator? So if I give someone the perception that I'm going to defect because I just engage in confrontational behavior really by being so direct, which means now they're waiting for me to be kind of mean to them or do something that someone would think is a thing that a person they wouldn't like would do, but I surprise them by actually doing the exact opposite, by doing something a hyper cooperative person would say and do, because I actually am there to be on their side and to help them out with this. I just started expressing true reciprocity with them, and reciprocity builds social trust, and social trust is the necessary and essential component of cooperation. is that too deep in the weeds? That makes sense, right? So that's the thing that we have to think about, is that like we are targeting, when we're talking about buy-in, we're not just saying, we're not trying to get people to believe us. That's convincing and that's persuasion. What we're actually talking about is getting people to cooperate with us, which means engage in a reciprocal social game. And then ultimately that means they'll believe us and do what we ask them to do and participate in that, be that way. But it's more like getting that cooperation is the essential piece and component of that. And social,
and collaboration too.
Exactly. And social trust is the particular component that you have to target if that is a missing element. If anybody's wondering, they can read Signal Detection Theory, Signals by Brian Skirms, Variety of the Evolutionary Theory of Behavioral Dynamics, Version of the Game Theory, Taylor and Nowak. There's a variety of different literature on these things.
Thanks for listening. Your code word, if you're interested in earning BACB CEUs, is Signal Detection Theory. Again, that is Signal Detection Theory. You can go online at www.explanatoryfiction.com and you can find our options for our CEUs, complete a quick quiz, and automatically get your certificate sent to your email inbox. Thank you so much for listening. The views expressed during the Explanatory Fiction podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the official policy or position of any other agency, organization, employer, or company. Assumptions made in the analysis are not reflective of any position of any other entity other than the authors, and since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to revision, change, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity. This podcast is to educate and inform, provide discussion, and does not constitute professional advice. Remember again that the variables in this case were randomly generated, as well as the name and the episode imagery. Thank you, math. Thank you, science. And thank you, artificial intelligence. Rhino LLC is an approved continuing education provider that is ACE number hashtag OP-19-3037, and the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, also known as the BACB, a registered trademark, does not sponsor or approve or endorse Rhino LLC, the materials, information, or sessions identified herein. Thank you for listening.